Welcome to Rewatchable, episode 54, where we're rewatching Pushing Daisies. And today we're going to be talking about episodes 5 and 6, entitled Girth and Bitches. As always, you can get in contact with us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. And you can find us on Twitter at @RE_watchable. This post will be available on hypeable.com. And today on the show, we have Danielle.
Hello, I'm having so many problems today, but I'm here.
And Caitlin.
Hello.
And I am Brittany. I'll be your host. And in a shocking turn of events, we have almost the same group as last week, so you may recognize all of our voices and opinions about everything.
We are a ragtag group of champions who comes back week after week for more.
We are, and they're both getting pies from me as a special gift for coming back and dealing with me as a host.
I should give you pies for dealing with me.
Well, as long as you promise to read all of your favorite quotes in Emerson's voice, then I think we'll be fine.
I can try. I don't know if I have. I think I have one Emerson this week.
Okay, so great.
It'll be good.
All right, so let's get right into episode 5, which was entitled Girth. And the synopsis for this episode is, it's All Hallows Eve for the Pie Gang as former jockey Olive is haunted by the ghost of a fellow jockey she trampled and hires Emerson to get to the bottom of the mystery. Our dead jockey, though, turns out to be alive, complete with horse legs, and the ghost is actually his mother. Who needs dance moms when you have jockey moms? Ned saves Olive, who takes the opportunity to smooch her beloved pie maker. Meanwhile, Ned celebrates the anniversary of learning his father abandoned him to start a new family, and Chunk convinces Olive to keep her secret from her aunts. It may have sounded like I said Chunk, but I think I said Chuck.
Okay. It reminded me of the Goonies just then, so, I mean, either way, it's good.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's not her name. Poor Chuck. All right, so we have a lot going on here. A lot of parent issues this week, apparently. Well, first of all, are you guys still enjoying the show? Let's start off with that.
I'm enjoying the show. It may sound like I wasn't before, but I have never not been enjoying the show. I think it's getting a little bit better for me. There's still something that's kind of gnawing at me and I'm not sure what it is, but I did like these two episodes. Girth more so than Bitches, but yeah.
What about Caitlin?
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it. I'm getting to the point where the mystery of the week is starting to drag for me, though. I'm ready for a little bit more than that, so I guess we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that first, then. We can jump to that. So, Caitlin, you don't like the mystery of the week thing. It's getting a little repetitive, maybe.
It's just very similar formula week in and week out, and I'm ready for a little bit more that's connecting the entire thing together.
Yeah, like more background, which, I mean, we'll talk about the flashbacks in a little bit, but, like, I feel like we're moving forward with more things than we are kind of looking backward at, and we kind of need those things to move forward.
Yeah, I can see that. Because, like, I think one of the problems I had initially watching it is that I don't really like episodic series too much. And with this show, I always find myself, like, even while we're rewatching it, kind of, like, waiting for it, you know, to, like, give me a little bit more to push it along as opposed to... Because you want to know more about Chuck, and you want to know more about Ned, and I want to know what they... We know that they want to be able to touch each other, but more than that, I want something else for them to, like, be working towards. It's kind of like it's like hit a dead end.
Yeah. Where are we going? Mm-hmm. These characters are great, but so what? Where are we going with them?
So in keeping with the mystery of the week, do you think that it was kind of predictable who we were going to, like, see at the end, sort of like a Scooby-Doo type of thing? Like, when they pull off the mask, who are we going to see underneath it?
I felt like as soon as they visited the mother, I was like, oh, well, she did it. And then as soon as we saw, like, the little vent in the side of the house as they were like leaving the house after talking to the mother. I was like, oh, the kid's still alive. Or, well, I kind of thought that he was alive from the beginning when they said it was him in his silks and everything like that. So it was a little predictable for me.
I kind of thought he might be going crazy or something and then was doing everything because he was a hypoglycemic vampire. Like, I don't know. I wasn't shocked, but I wasn't anticipating it being the mother either.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about it, to be honest. Like when I first, when I was rewatching this one and I saw the character in the beginning, I was like, wait a minute, this guy is like 6 feet tall in real life. How is he going to, oh, wait, never mind. He has horse legs. I forgot.
Yeah, that was so weird. That was really weird.
Well, do you guys think that seeing this show is like already completely insane and we've talked about how it sort of fits into a fairy tale world, do you think that a ghost would be completely outside the world of possibilities in here, or would that be taking the show way too far out?
I don't know. That was the question that I had actually put in the doc because I'm not sure how I feel about it.
Uh-huh.
I feel like even though everything in it is so fantastic in the sense of like everything is heightened, I still don't know if a ghost would fit within it. I don't know.
But at the same time, our main character has magic powers.
Yeah.
I tend to write that off really easily, though. Like, I feel like he's, like, completely separate, like, whereas no other type of supernatural thing can come into the show, which I don't know if that's weird or not, but that's just when I'm watching it, I'm like, I kind of almost forget about it in a way. Like, I'm like, oh, that's just Ned. He has magical powers. I don't know. I think I sort of take it out of the story too much. Oh, so Halloween, because we're watching this in the springtime. How did you guys like the Halloween theme? Because obviously this episode aired around Halloween, so it kind of makes sense that they would work with the theme that they had at the time of airing. So what did you guys think of bringing ghouls and goblins and all sorts of stuff into a theme that already had a ghost?
I couldn't see the ghost episode living outside of the Halloween episode, because I feel like for certain shows, Halloween episodes are always crazy. Like, the first one that pops into mind is like Bones. Like, those ones are always crazy, or just anything. It's always heightened even more. So I love Halloween, and I liked the Halloween theme, I guess. Yeah.
I guess that kind of lets them get away with the ghost storyline, whereas you were saying before, like, the ghost maybe might not have been able to exist in this world outside of having that theme to work it in.
Exactly.
Oh, I like your this comment added in here. Also, who rides a horse in a house?
That bothered me so much.
Or in a bar?
It bothered me so much.
And it's her own house. Like, she ruined her own house.
I know. the poor horse, like, I used to be a big horseback rider, and so, like, I'm just watching this. I'm like, oh, my God, get that horse out of the house, please.
And the horse, like, breathed fire, or I don't know if people were just seeing that or if that was real, but that was really intense.
Yeah, I kind of started expecting a headless horseman story because of, like, the fire and stuff. Yeah.
Or, like, I was half expecting, like, the Lord of the Rings and, what is it, the Nazgul? Am I correct in saying that? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And like them and their horses, like that's what I was seeing when she was like going through the house and when it started breathing fire. Like, this is weird.
So already weird, and now we're adding a fire breathing horse to the mix.
Why not?
All right, so getting off of Supernatural for just a second and going back to where we were talking about, we kind of touched on a little bit with the flashbacks almost. We're going to talk about them more a little bit, but just to focus on Ned and Chuck for right now. Their relationship, obviously, now we're getting a little bit more information about, whereas in the beginning, it sort of seemed like they were just these two kids who live next door and maybe like stormed a fake city as dressed up as monsters once. But now we're getting to know that they did hang out a lot when they were kids. So do the background scenes seem strange? Danielle, I know you put this in here, so do you want to go first? And
sure. So I don't know why, but because we only got that one scene with them like destroying a town in the beginning of the show, that kind of laid the basis for me for what their friendship was like, or their only interactions with each other. And I think because this has come after, this is what, the fifth episode? So we've had mm-hmm. four before this, and we've had four episodes of seeing them as grown-ups interacting. And in the way that they interact, I kind of made peace with the fact that they maybe weren't as good friends before. So now that this came in five episodes later, it seemed really strange to me, and it almost didn't even fit within the image I have for their friendship, if that makes sense at all.
So you thought that the one scene was enough, is what you're saying?
I didn't necessarily think that it was enough, mm-hmm. but because we hadn't gotten anything since then, I guess I compensated for it. Like, I wasn't happy with it, but
okay.
It was mean. This is what we have. So after about four episodes, I started basing my opinions off of that. And so now that we're actually getting more, it's weird for me to go back and have to rework it, because I feel like this sort of thing should have come one or two episodes earlier.
I got you.
That's kind of what I'm saying.
Yeah, so Caitlin, do you think anything about that?
I guess I didn't really consider that would be like their only interaction, because they lived across the street for a long time and they said they were each other's first kiss, which I assume implies more interaction than like the occasional play date or whatever. So I guess it didn't really even occur to me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I really paid attention to that too much, but now I can see what you're saying, Danielle, where they do kind of, they do seem a little out of place. Like, it would have been nicer to, I would have liked them more in the beginning, which I think is what you also would feel if we had more interactions with them towards the beginning. So do you think, though, because now we're having these flashbacks are obviously now going to be a pretty important part to the show, or they are trying to be an important part to the show. Because this week we had the episode, in this episode we saw what happened with Ned's father, and that was like a pretty longer flashback than just the Ned looked at the moon flashback that we're kind of used to. So are the flashbacks, like, they're not really, I feel, and I agree with this question, that they're not going anywhere. I never liked the flashbacks. I mean, I guess they do explain the whole problem with Ned going back home from school and seeing that his dad had moved on, not only from their home, but to a whole new family, and sort of got rid of Ned in a way. But I just didn't, I don't think we needed a flashback, like, for that. I don't know. What do you guys think of the flashbacks?
I think they need an arc the way that the present day does, like...
Yes, I think that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, like, I watch Arrow, and Arrow has flashbacks every single week to things that happened years before, but they have an arc to them that relates to the present day every week somehow. So there's an arc in the flashbacks that they have movement within the episode, and then they have movement over the season that's going somewhere. And I feel like these flashbacks are more just, here's background information you need, info dump, instead of what you need and it's going somewhere with the plot or whatever. And it gets a little cumbersome to watch. And if I were going to rewatch it, it would make me want to fast forward through them. Like, I got the background information the first time. I'm just going to stick with the present.
Yeah, that is exactly what I wanted to say without actually saying it. So thank you for saying that. Because I was thinking, because I watched Once Upon a Time, and the Once Upon a Time also is sort of like, all this stuff is happening in the past, but how is it relating to what is actually going on in the future? Yes, it's giving you more, I guess it's more of an info dump, like closer on the Pushing Daisies end of the spectrum, but it is also kind of advancing what is influencing these characters' interactions now. I think that these flashbacks, like you commented, Danielle, are sort of just like plopped in wherever they kind of felt like it.
Yeah, and I really enjoy flashbacks that have thematic similarities to the present future. Like, both of the shows you named, I watched them both, and I really like their flashbacks because you get the same sort of themes. You get the characters working out the same sort of themes in both halves, and so you can kind of see how maybe that first one affects the second one, which shows character growth, it shows forward movement, whereas here, this just kind of, instead of showing any sort of movement, it just kind of fills in gaps, but gaps that aren't necessarily imperative to what is going on in the present day. except for Ned going off on a weird tangent to his old house. Like, that's the only gap that really fills in, but I felt like that wasn't an important gap that needed to be there.
It's information that you could say in a sentence in the present day that happened, rather than needing to go all the way into the past to see it happen, because really not that much happens in the past.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it's still, he still would have been able to get to the aunt's house and figure out the whole pie thing when he bit into the pie and, like, he killed the strawberry or whatever fruit it was that he was eating. Like, you still could have gotten him there without having, like, 10 minutes or so of information dumping, as we've so nicely added. So, Caitlin, do you want to just maybe wrap up this episode talking about the potential of Chuck and Olive being friends? Do you want to kick that off and we can sort of work through it?
Sure. Danielle put in the doc just kind of the idea of Chuck and Olive being friends, and that got me thinking to something that has just kind of been under the surface, especially with these last couple episodes, just with the women in the show. Is I was thinking about the Bechdel test and how, you know, does your show or movie have two women? Do they talk to each other about something other than men? Because Chuck and Olive talk to each other a lot about Ned, and it gets a little grating. They do talk about other things, like the secret, and then there were the aunts who don't talk about men much at all. So it passes the Bechdel test, which is not that high of a bar, but it still passes. But just something about the female characters feels a little off, and maybe it's like the 50s aesthetic sensibility that we're getting, where just it seems like the women are a little too much concerned with the men and letting the men do the action, and Olive's a little too concerned with how much she wants Ned when he isn't going to give her anything. I'm just like, it's not, I'm not feeling like the show is anti-feminist in any way. I'm just feeling like there's something slightly off with how the women are written. I'm not sure if that's the only one.
No, I totally agree with that. And you're bringing up the Bechdel test and saying that it still feels off. I feel like even though they pass the Bechdel test in, I don't want to say theory or practice, but like with the words that they use, they pass. But I feel like everything that's talked about always goes back and is related to what the men are doing. So like Chuck's secret has to do with what Ned did. And I don't know, it just, it, that's kind of how it feels to me as well. So yeah, it does feel off to me somehow too, because it feels like though they pass, some of their things sound maybe a little bit superficial or just not important enough dialogue to remember. Like, I can't remember a lot of the things that the aunts say most of the time. So yeah, I agree with you.
I do too. All right, so our favorite scenes from this week. Well, my favorite scene was just seeing Olive surrounded by the other jockeys when they were burning, like, the girth. And I just loved how they played her as a jockey to begin with. And
it's awesome.
She is so tiny. I was like, this, it was just so perfect that she would have been this jockey and, like, can, like, talk to these, like, little guys, and their names are, like, Mixture. Like, they're, I just loved it. I loved that whole storyline, and I thought Kristen Chenoweth did, like, a great job, and I just love the look on the, all of their faces when they're making the pact and, like, standing around those burning, like, effigy.
I liked that, so, too. It was fun.
Yeah, I don't know why. Kristen Chenoweth is just, she's so funny.
It was totally unexpected.
Yes. Yeah, right?
But then it's perfect. It's like, I never would have thought of that, but of course.
They're like, let's see, Kristen Chenoweth is about 4'9". What can we make her do besides sing? Oh, she can be a jockey. That's great. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
So mine was in the morgue when Ned is saying that he's uncomfortable with the money that they're using for this case coming from Olive because she hired them. And Emerson, like, was like, let me check with the money, see if that's okay. And he has the fake finger phone calling the money, being like, yeah, the money says it's okay. It was so funny.
That was so funny. Close to being my favorite quote. It was very close second.
Danielle, what was your favorite scene?
I just loved the ridiculousness of waking up, I think his name is Pinky, the dead jockey, the bar owner, yeah, and just handing him a drink. Like, it was totally a thing that a jockey would do, and also he, like, sounded sort of like Scottish or Irish, so it just, it worked perfectly.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I loved the jockey plotline. I thought that was just so good.
I really did too. It sounded like we didn't really touch on that a lot, which is fine because, I mean, it was kind of what it was, but it was really fun.
Yeah. I think now's a good time to, like, touch on it. That's cool. So my favorite line from this week was by Emerson, and it's when they're being chased by the ghost mother, I guess you could say, in on the road, and Emerson, like, comes out of the corner and just, like, slams the old woman with a shovel as she's, like, riding towards him, and he just, like, looks at the shovel, and he's just like, I love you, shovel.
Yes!
So Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
So mine is kind of right, like, well, a reference before that earlier in the episode when Olive and Emerson, who I just need to be interacting all the time.
Yes.
Because they're my favorites, are in the crypt, and Olive is going off about, like, the secrets of faking your death and, like, how people will figure it out if you're not an idiot. And she goes, are you an idiot? And Emerson goes, no, because an idiot might misunderstand what you're saying and hit you with a shovel. And then later he hits someone with a shovel.
I loved when she was trying to, like, pry open the tomb and she's, like, completely pushing herself on the shovel and, like, hanging there and it's not moving.
They just need to interact all the time because they're the best.
I agree with that statement.
Danielle, what was your favorite line this episode?
So mine actually wasn't Emerson this time. It was Aunt Vivian, and it's when Ned went to visit her and realized that the pies were coming from his pie shop. And so Aunt Vivian, when talking about the pies, goes, I don't know how we survived without it. It's like a sex addiction, I would imagine.
That was my second favorite.
I think Aunt Vivian is just fantastic. She is, like, so, like, cute and, like, trying not to say the wrong thing, I feel like, around her sister all the time. Mm-hmm. And she's just so funny.
She's definitely my favorite of the two.
Yeah.
I had to choose favorites, which I will.
All right. So the second episode we had to watch this week was episode 6, entitled Bitches. And the synopsis for this episode is, this episode is all about gangster love as Joe McHale plays a polygamous dog breeder murdered by his wife. It's dealer's choice as to whether it was wife 1 through 4, and Olive joins in on the investigation. While Emerson and wife number 3 bond and experience a little bondage, Ned contemplates the kiss, unaware that Olive has already confessed to Chuck. It's revealed wife the first did the deed over a super hybrid dog. Ned realizes he loves Olive only as a friend and only wants Chuck. I have such a difficult time reading synopses today.
I gave you a little word twisting there.
Yeah, that's okay.
It was good. It's worth it.
Yeah, so this episode was, I actually really liked this episode. I think Emerson really played up to his, like, comedic timing perfectly. I loved it. Plus, it was entitled Bitches from the start, and Joel McHale is in it, so you knew that it was going to be a little funny, at least.
Those two things. First, when I saw it was called Bitches, I was like, this is great. And then when I saw Joel McHale's face on my screen, I was so excited. I was so excited.
He's so, like, goofy and corny. Oh, so good.
Speaking of Emerson, just randomly, I realized between this last episode and this one that Chi McBride, who plays Emerson, is now on Hawaii 5-0, which I watch.
Really?
So my watching of Hawaii 5-0 has completely changed now that I know that he's Emerson.
I hope it changed in a good way.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good.
So much more in love with the character that he plays. I was like, you're Emerson! You're the best!
He's in this movie called The Brothers Solomon with Will Arnett, and he is perfect. He's just like Emerson, so it's, like, it's unbelievable. He's so funny.
That sounds good. I like Will Arnett, too, so I would actually watch that.
Yeah, it's really, really good. It's about these, like, two brothers who try to, like, have a kid because their dad's dying. It's just so funny. But anyway, let's talk about Pushing Daisies episode 6.
Sure.
So this episode, as we kind of touched on in the synopsis, has some adult innuendos in it, but it's still kind of cartoony. Ooh, I like that word. Has this impacted your viewing of the show at all now that, like, we're kind of touching on, like, I guess we could start in the beginning of the episode even when Ned is asleep and he's kind of having this dream about Chuck being able to finally like touch him, but then he turns into Olive. But it's kind of a little racy for like a half hour fairy tale-ish cartoon. So has that impacted anything or changed the way you're looking at it, Danielle?
I thought that that scene in particular that you brought up was very jarring, just in that I was not expecting it. After a few seconds, I kind of figured it was a dream sequence, so I wanted to see where it went, but I was not expecting them to like all of a sudden like, jump on each other. And so yeah, after you brought it up, after it was brought up in the doc, and after seeing that, I kind of now see the show as more cartoony than I did before. So I don't know how it impacts it at all. I think the fact that someone brought it up that it is cartoony, like that impacts me more than the innuendos in the cartoony. Like that's, I think it's backwards, but yeah.
What about you, Caitlin?
I just feel like I put this in the doc because there's just, I get a little cognitive dissonance going on because there's like, this episode is about a polygamist and like there's, Emerson has a ball gag in his mouth at one point. Like, these are like, their restaurant is called the Pie Hole. And there's the quote in the last episode about the sex addiction. Like, there are innuendos and like, just kind of unexpected things that are much more adult in nature being brought up. They solve murders every week. And then, but there's no blood. And it's just, it's a very cartoony approach to some surprising issues. And I wonder if, because they have kind of this cartoony approach to things, that they can get away with bringing certain plot lines in that they might not if they were playing things straight, I guess. I'm not sure. But it's a little weird to me, like, how am I supposed to take all of this if you're talking about ball gags with, like, brightly colored shirts and all these kind of things. Like, it's weird.
Yeah, and I have to agree with, though, Danielle, you called it, like, that first scene jarring, and that's exactly how I felt, like, rewatching this, because, like, this whole time you know that Ned and Chuck can't touch. Like, that's just, it's in the fine print. They cannot touch each other. So that sort of, like, removes that, like, sex topic completely off the table for this show, and you kind of expect that to go away, but then you realize, like, at the end of the day, even though it's a dream sequence, like, that's kind of what they want in the end. And I guess this is just, like, a different, the way that they can bring it into the show is through, like, Emerson being tied up and all sorts of stuff like that. So yeah, let's focus on the significance of touch in this episode. So we have Ned at the table when he's, like, petting Digby with, like, the fake arm. And we then also have Ned and Chuck when in the dream sequence versus real life. And then Olive and Ned kissing, which I don't understand how they're able to do that. And Chuck and Digby. What about Chuck and Digby?
She hugs Digby and was like, I'm going to pretend he's you.
Pretending I'm hugging you. That's right. Yeah. I forgot about that scene when they're in the office of the other dude. That's right. So Chuck and Ned, beginning of the episode, Ned clearly wants to be able to touch Chuck, but they realize that, you know, that's never going to happen. So are they kind of happy living this life in separate beds, or are they going to get sick of it? What do you guys think? Talk about the significance of touching, or Chuck and Ned specifically, whatever you feel like touching on.
Ha, ha, unintended.
Ha, ha, ha. That was unintentional.
Sure.
Danielle, why don't you go first?
Oh gosh,
you could do it.
Brain's a little slow today. I think that the show is going to have to come to some sort of head on Ned and Chuck touching, because touch is a very human thing, like, or not even a human thing, but to touch, it's very fulfilling. Like, you see these science experiments, this is the first thing I could think of, so just roll with me here. There's a baby monkey. I don't know if you've seen these science experiments before. It starts with a baby monkey, and you have a baby monkey put into a cage with this structure, I guess, that's supposed to look like an adult monkey, but it's kind of cold and wiry. So you have that, and then the baby monkey is put into another thing with like a towel or like something really soft for them to touch. And, like, they prefer the soft thing. Like, they need that sort of touch. They need to be touched by others. And that's kind of how I see Chuck and Ned. I don't know which one would be the baby monkey, But I feel like at some point that's going to be the make it or break it of the relationship, is not being able to touch themselves or touch.
I got not what you being meant. Able
to, not being Speaking able of to innuendos. Have, oh God, physical contact with each other. I think that's going to either make or break them. Long story short.
Innocent Sunday podcast. That's fine. What about you, Caitlin? Do you think it's going to make or break them?
I'm just thinking, like, in a realistic relationship, like, sexual compatibility is very important, and that can really drive a wedge if, you know, there's just no physical compatibility between two people, because it's, like Danielle was saying, a very human need to have touch from your partner. And, you know, we saw Ned very much needing it. And so, or at least at the beginning of the episode. So in a realistic relationship, I guess I have a hard time seeing how this could last, but we're also in this fairy tale world. And they're like this fairy tale romance. And they're also like this 50s couple with the separate beds. And I don't know. I feel like it should drive them apart, but because of the fairy tale-esque setting, it's probably not going to. But I can see it causing a lot more issues just because of that very human need to touch each other.
Yeah, I agree. But I like the point you brought up, where since the setting kind of plays, and the way that the show's constructed plays a huge role in their relationship kind of rooting for them, because even right as soon as Chuck, like, Olive kisses Ned in the episode before this, he instantly sees Chuck and is like, his mind is like completely off of Olive. Like, he knows what happened. It's going to cause him a lot of guilt. But as soon as he sees Chuck, he's like, nope, doesn't matter. That's the one I want. Which is, I mean, it drives him a little crazy, obviously, because he has that lovely dream. But I think that you brought up a good point, that the setting and the fairy tale like thing is really rooting for them to win out over holding hands.
Oh, definitely.
True love's kiss will solve everything.
I know. I
There's see, your once upon a time.
I could see something like that happen, definitely, during the show, although it was ended earlier than it should have, I guess, so maybe we won't see it. But I feel like it could be building towards something that kind of solves Ned and Chuck's problem. I don't know. Just because of the fairy tale atmosphere and the whole true love's kiss once upon a time background that I have while watching this.
Yeah, it's kind of like embedded in your mind, like, it'll work out.
Hmm. Which kind of makes me hope it doesn't, just to prove me wrong.
Yeah, well, you never know. I can't say anything, but
I know.
You never know. It did end early, so we'll have to wait and see for that one. We'll have to all get back on and discuss the ending. Yes. Who knows? It could be the three of us the rest of this time, so who knows? So let's jump just a little bit, because we're talking about love and whatever, you know, happily ever after, all that niceness. So Emerson kind of has a little fling with love, or obedience school, maybe, is more fitting to what he has a fling with in this episode, when he kind of begins to fall for wife number three of the dog breeder, who teaches obedience school to, like, Jack Russell Terriers, I think they are. And she has this clicker, and she's, like, training him.
She's a dominatrix.
Yeah, she is a dominatrix. But, you know, I was trying to keep it fairy tale-esque.
I really hope that she comes back, and that, like, this whole thing isn't dropped, just because it was, like, a mystery of the week. Because I thought their relationship was really interesting, because you don't see very many dominatrix type women and the couples very often.
Yeah, plus it was cool to see. I liked watching Emerson interact with her whenever she would, like, use the clicker, and he would, like, his gaze would, like, stare to the side. And she's wearing, like, a lot of, like, red leather, and he was, mm-hmm. like, he really got the, I just liked watching him completely change his demeanor.
They had good chemistry. I enjoyed their scenes together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we did talk about what we think the show's message about love is, and I think the setting plays, we kind of touched on it, the setting plays a huge role in what their message of love is. Like, you love, like, true love will win out overall, is what I'm getting from it. Do you guys agree with that, or do you think that the show's giving kind of mixed messages about love, especially in relation to Olive? So actually, let's, because Olive just wants Ned, she only has eyes for Ned, so her love is doomed, in my opinion.
Unless they go with that threesome that Chuck was considering for a few minutes up there.
That's right.
Because she was like, you know, maybe polygamy is not such a bad idea. Maybe two is not enough. And I was like, hey, solve all the love triangles right there.
Yeah. I think I kind of get that from the show. I kind of get a message more like love comes in strange places or packages. When you kind of think of all the couples that we've seen, like Emerson and this woman, Chuck and Ned, obviously. And then I can't help but think of the couple in the windmill and how strange that came to be, but then it did and it worked. So that's kind of what I see more than like true love wins over everything. It's just kind of like love comes in strange packages or comes from strange places, which fits in with the scenery of strangeness. It's the best I can do with that, but yeah.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good point, especially because even if you look at the ants, like they are clearly have the weirdest love for each other, at least, because yes, they have their connection that they're sisters and they're twins and all this stuff, but they tolerate each other and put up with each other, and they are two of the strangest people ever, I think. So that's a good point, is that strange love, man.
Too, there was the moment where the narrator says that Ned realizes that love comes in many different ways. Like, he has that realization about Olive that he does love her, but just in a different way than he loves Chuck. There are many kinds of love, and they're all valid, I guess, is something we're kind of seeing. Like, the aunt's love is very different than Ned's love for Chuck, but they're both portrayed as valid.
Definitely. I like that.
Yeah, I do too. I missed that line, so that's good catch there. So that's must have been part of the theme of this episode. Another episode, though, it focused on food. Well, almond coffee creamer, because that's the last thing that our good friend Joel McHale tasted before he hilariously stabbed himself over and over.
Sorry. That shouldn't be funny, but it was.
So when we were talking last week, we talked a lot about the pies and just adding, you know, just these holistic medicines to the pies and sending them to the ants. So who put this in the doc, Danielle? Were you the one who talked about the food? Okay.
I just wanted to see if it added anything to our argument, because now that we talked about food in the last episode, I'm more sensitive to whenever it comes up. Like in the last episode of the show, Ned ate the strawberry and it turned rotten, but physically ate something, and then there were saltine crackers, and now we have like this almond coffee creamer that we kind of got hit over the head with a little bit. And I thought it was interesting that the show is still emphasizing food more than I've ever seen any other show besides like a Food Network show do.
Yeah, and even like the change that you can realize from food. So like the almond coffee creamer, it was a very distinct, recognizable taste, but it was like laced with cyanide. And the, like, berry turned rotten at Ned's touch, and the pies were enhanced with, like, good-feeling medicine from the traveling love doctor, and everything changes once you taste the food. Oh, the hypoglycemic crackers changed controlled rage. So, yeah, they're very, like, very significant.
I think if nothing else, it's an indication that the things we were seeing before are intentional, that if they're going to keep harping on the food and the results of the food, that what they're doing is intentional. It's not just a happenstance that, oh, this is food too, and this happens to be food. No, like, it's on purpose.
Yeah, which I'm interested to know what that purpose may be, considering I think you were kind of surprised by this last time, Brittany.
I think.
So I'm assuming that it's never touched on in the show. So I'm kind of interested to see if we can come up with some sort of conclusion for it by the end of the show, which I don't think we will, but it would be kind of nice to do.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you actually brought it up again, because again, this week, even though we talked about it last week, I really didn't even pay attention to it again. But now I think with the crackers, at the beginning of last episode, there were the crackers on the floor. And then I kind of like, they were in the back of my mind, like, oh, who needs crackers? Who needs crackers? Like, you know, you kind of like harp on it. And in this episode, again, it was a food related thing. So now I'm definitely going to be paying more attention to it again upon rewatching, because I didn't obviously pay attention to it beforehand.
Well, it's funny when you think about it because Brian Fuller, who created this, is also behind Hannibal, which is about
Very, very good.
So that's also very
I didn't think about that until you've mentioned his name, and I was like, oh, God, yes. So there's that.
So there's that. We will, you know, I know we promised to send pies last week to people who left reviews on iTunes, but they will not contain any body parts of humans. They'll just contain pigeons.
Props.
I think we said, yeah.
So yeah, but thank you, Caitlin, for bringing that food thing up in the first place last time.
Because I just notice it. It's just there.
And it's interesting to follow too. So it's fun to watch.
That'll be something to look out for. So our favorite scenes from this episode, I think I mentioned it briefly before. My favorite scene was when Joel McHale is like slipping on the coffee, because you kind of like, yes, that you find out that this guy has been stabbed like 15 times, but then to actually watch Joel McHale like falling into a like grooming brush 15 times because he fell on coffee is pretty hilarious. I enjoyed that little comedic moment and not having like someone in the office stabbing him. Caitlin, what was your favorite scene?
Mine was when Ned and Digby were in their quote unquote pet therapy and Ned was putting all his issues on the dog. And it was super awkward and they were like 5 feet apart on the couch and it was really funny.
I forgot about that. That was so good.
That was really good. And he's just sort of like sitting there. Danielle, what was your favorite? Obviously, but
anything with Joel McHale, because I really enjoy him. I enjoy his comedy. I would watch The Soup all the time. I unfortunately have never seen Community and I'm kicking myself for not doing so because I love him so much. And I kind of feel like the show underused him in a little bit of a way because he wasn't around a lot, but he totally made it worth it with the stabbing and just the fact that he was a polygamist. I don't know. It was just very enjoyable and I'm glad they chose Joel McHale for that because it totally worked.
I agree. He was really, really funny. So our favorite lines from this week, Emerson had some fantastic lines this week, but I felt like I needed to give, you know, someone else a little love. And I thought what Ned said was like really, really sweet.
I was just wondering if we wanted to touch on really quickly Olive, because we talked about her a little bit. We talked about women a little bit. I don't know, because this was something Caitlin brought up. I don't know if you had something else to say.
Mostly just that she's getting on my nerves.
Okay.
So we're not feeling Olive anymore?
I love her. I just wish she would stop obsessing over Ned. Like, it's kind of clear at this point that he's not into her the way she is into him. And it kind of goes back to the whole, there's something off about the women in that she's a little too obsessed with him and needs to have some interest outside of him.
Yeah, and I think that this episode sort of, like, maybe set her on the road, I don't want to call it this, but, like, on the road to recovery, because she was kind of, like, realizing that, like, all right, I am not a player in this game with him. But she is maybe, like, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, but, like, maybe her being involved with the crimes is much more fun for her, and she'll start to focus her energy elsewhere, even though it could just be a ploy to hang out with Ned more, but we'll have to see. I still like Olive, but I do agree she gets a little clingy, but I think that she's a great character to utilize, especially in the investigations. I love watching her.
Yeah, exactly. I like to see more of that kind of character than the I love Ned, Ned should love me kind of character, which I think they are veering away from. Yeah, yep. Sorry for interrupting. I just wanted
to show, like, I think that because I jumped to Emerson.
Yeah.
And I think that got a little lost, but
back to your regular scheduled program.
So our favorite lines from this week. So I went with a quote from Ned, because I thought it was really sweet. And he says, "Everyone wants stuff. We wake up every day with a list of wishes a mile long, and maybe we spend our lives trying to make those wishes come true. But just because we want them doesn't mean we need them to be happy." I just thought that was really cute because obviously, you know, he wishes that he could, like, you know, just simply hold Chuck's hand walking down the street, but he can't, but he's still happy just to watch her sleep, which is a little creepy, but.
Happens.
Yeah. I don't know. I think taken out of the context of Pushing Daisies, this is like a nice Hallmark card. So, you know. Caitlin, What was your favorite line from this week?
Mine is Emerson's philosophy on love, which just had me rolling. He said, some women love like gangsters. They'd be like, oh, baby, you bleeding. How'd that happen? Well, they had an eraser in their weave.
I don't understand how good that is.
The writing for Emerson and his delivery are just like so spot on. It's hilarious.
Perfect. It's so good.
All right, Danielle, we're wrapping up this week with your final quote.
Mine is also Emerson, and I forgot who he was talking to, but I'm sure you'll know it when I say it. And he says, I suppose I could pay my bills with blind kids' smiles, but their money's a lot easier.
Yes. I had that one written down, too.
I think I had yours written down, too. Or, like, when I was researching, I was like, oh, this is good.
Yeah, no, I definitely had both of them. But then I saw your twos, and I was like, ah, oh, I should probably, like, switch it up a bit. We can't just have an Emerson love fest, even though it's perfect.
Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. So let's do some listener feedback real quick, and then we will sign off for the week. So on Twitter, we have Carmen Sita at Chaotic Sex Life. So innuendo.
Innuendo!
Yeah. It is just right out there. she says, pushing daisies, it's so beautiful. I'm in first season. So good job. Keep watching it and leave us more comments, especially during the week, about what you think going into it. And Caitlin, do you want to read Laura's?
Laura.
Sure. This is from our frequent commenter, Laura Jurgensmeyer, who says, I started listening as I'm running. I don't know why I didn't do this forever ago, because it makes working out so much better. So I'm glad we can help you with your workout, Laura. And thank you, as always, for commenting.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to throw this out there because this is kind of how I got Carmen Sita into the mix. But we'll be asking fun questions on Twitter, and there's also like a Twitter that has fun pushing daisies quotes that we'll be retweeting from. So just get in contact with us, answer our question of the week, and if it like gets enough replies or if people like it enough, we can make it a recurring segment on the podcast, which I think would be fun. So there's that.
So as always, you can get in touch with us via email at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. And we're on Twitter. And like we said, we'll be posting some more stuff. And we are at re_watchable. This post will be on hypeable.com. And leave us some iTunes reviews and subscribe to the podcast. We would really love iTunes reviews so that we don't just have to rely on Twitter. That'd be nice.
And the more you review us, the more people will be able to find us. And then we'll just be one big happy pie eating family of cartoon people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we like pie and talking about Emerson in love. So
it's
give
stuff.
Us some love.
And stuffing our pie holes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I know we're a little opinionated at points. So if you have an opinion on what we're talking about, definitely email us or comment on the post on Hypeable. I think the more interaction we have with all of our listeners, the more interesting kind of discussions that we can have. So keep those words coming.
If we have been avoiding something that you guys want to hear us talk about, leave a suggestion too. We'll gladly hash it out on here.
For sure.
All right. So that's it for this week. Be sure to tune in next week. Watch the next two episodes, episodes 7 and 8. And I'm Brittany.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Danielle.
Bye.
See you later.
Bye.
Beans. That was like streamlined fast.